It's incredible. We're fast approaching Pentecost of 2019. It's amazing the things we go through in God's church sometimes, the timing of events and what we look toward, what we look for. But again, we understand, we know full well that Joshua the Christ obviously is not returning in this Pentecost. And we actually knew that well before Passover period. And felt pretty strong about that in late February as well. So what now? Well, we're to ask the question when we don't know exactly what to do at any moment in time. Ask, what do we do now? Because obviously we have to continue to look forward. And as I've given in sermons before as well, we have markers that God gives to us, or at least that we have, that we know that we can look at. And we keep pressing forward to those. It's just like I think of long races, because if they didn't have markers on a long race of exactly what you, where you have to turn or where you have to go, especially when you get up to 10 miles or 26 or whatever it is, I'm not even sure how long some of those are. But anyway, they're long and a lot longer than what I want to run or ever have wanted to run. But you have markers along the way, and they really do give you encouragement. Probably the longest I can remember markers was about 3.5 miles. I did run 10 miles once, and that was a killer. Never did it again. Once was enough. But 3.5, I remember distinctly different areas that we could see, and you keep pushing for those, hoping that there aren't too many markers behind it, because you just get worn out when you run, when you race. At least I do. I think most people do. But if you don't have something to look toward, to look for, it can become very, very negative, and it's something you have to fight against. You do anyway when you're running. At least, again, I go back to the time when I used to run. It's been a long time since I have. But when you're in a race like that, or any kind of a race running, you have to drive yourself. The longer they are, the more you have to push yourself, especially if you're trying for time or something of that nature. So we're going on to another marker. What is it? Well, we'll talk about that a little bit in the sermon. But this sermon has a rather unique title to it. It's entitled, No One Knows. So, interesting title, someone said when they came through and saw it on the screen back there. So the title of the sermon should indicate what we in God's church need to address at this particular time. We've now come full circle concerning this particular subject, if you will, and we'll see that as we go along throughout this. But let's begin looking at some verses that touch on that very specific phrase. I think everybody in God's church is very familiar with that phrase, and then build upon what our focus must be. Matthew 24. Matthew 24. And in some of this, at this point in time, I really don't know fully what I'm going to say about all of this. I have an idea of where it's going fully, but there are some things that will come out in the sermon, I'm sure, help be clarified as we go along. But this is about the parable of the fig tree here in verse 32. And Christ said, when its branch becomes tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. Now, I'd think that the farther north you live, the more exciting that is. In some areas of the world, it doesn't mean much. It doesn't mean the same thing at all. But if you have full four seasons of the year and you have a winter time, especially if it's cold and been a little nasty, you kind of look forward to this point in time here when all of a sudden you see a tree begin to change. You know that there's a tenderness that comes on there when the sap begins to come up into a tree once again, and it's going to come back to life. An incredible process that God gives in so much of His creation like that. And so, again, you realize that we're going to have a change in season. It's not going to be cold forever. And you look forward to it. I think what an incredible parable to use in this particular case here, because he used this as an example of giving signs. We live in a world, much like in some respects, if you don't like winter and it's been bad, you look for a change. You want a change. And we look forward to a change. We look forward to a time. I think the more we see what's happening in the world, and it's getting so much worse with technology. It's accelerating so fast, the things that are taking place out here. And I don't know about you, but I ache inside to see a different world, to see people not have to live in the kind of confusion, the kind of misery, the kind of suffering that's taking place. And it's all over the world, the kind of suffering that's taking place. And we see it more today, probably because of technology, than ever before. But talking to a teacher here just before services, talking about how much worse it's gotten and how much worse it's getting. And the school systems and young children and what they have to live through, what they're living through, what they're experiencing now that they didn't have to experience 15, 20 years ago, didn't have to think about back then. Now they do. They don't understand what they're experiencing, but someone who has lived through those things can see the difference. And it hurts. You don't want to see a generation of young people growing up and learning, having to learn and having to focus on some of the things that they focus upon nowadays. It wrenches the heart. Things you see on TV, things you see that are commonplace in TV shows anymore. The world has changed incredibly so. So I think of the example when it talks about Lot, and it says he vexed his righteous soul day by day, living in the area of Sodom that he did, Gomorrah area, region. And he hated to see what people were going through. He hated to see what his own family was going through. And it hurt him inside. And so that's why it uses that expression, he vexed his righteous soul day by day because of what he saw. He desired something different. He wanted a different world. And God's people, when they're shown various truths, they didn't have that much back then, to be candid with you. They knew about God's kingdom, that there was going to be a kingdom, that there's going to be a Messiah. But candidly, at that time, the time of Abraham, they didn't know very much as far as those things that God was planning. And we'll hear more about that on Pentecost, by the way, but it's incredible the things we go through in time. And so again here, we understand, because of examples like this, that we're so near, nearer now than we've ever known it in God's church. This coming fall, I'll have been baptized 50 years in God's church. And I think, where did the time go? So verse 33, so also, when you see all these things, know that it's near, even at the doors. And so he had given various things here before this. He'd been talking about various things that were going to happen because the disciples asked of him, they wanted to know, basically, when is the end going to be? When is the end of this age going to be? They wanted to know when the kingdom was going to be established. Now, they didn't even grasp the things that Christ was saying, not even till after he died, after Pentecost, 31 AD. Then the things he taught them, because they'd received the Holy Spirit, they began to see then what he had spoken, same as with some of these things here. But even then, they didn't grasp a lot of the things that were given at this particular time, even later on. So verse 33, so also when you see all these things, know that it's near, even at the doors. I'm working on a post right now and writing various things about the age, this time we live in. And it's incredible to witness what's taking place, because I can't help but think of God working through Mr. Armstrong, what God revealed to him at various stages along the way, and of the things that the world was going through during his particular time, and things that God gave to him to speak about. And I think about the end of the period of time after World War II, when he came to an understanding there in the late 40s that Germany was going to rise again, that Europe was going to rise again. God began to give him understanding. I think of the period of time that led up to 1950, when he sent a crew to the first meeting of the European Common Market, when they were coming together as a common market. Because, and that was written about then, that particular meeting. And the reason he did that was because God had just given to him, previous to this, not too long, an understanding that there was to be another revival of what is referred to in Revelation and other places here, but the Roman Empire. And the seventh revival, the last revival, would be indeed the last one. And he was given to know at that particular time when he started seeing these things that what they just experienced because of World War II was the sixth, and that there was one more to come. That's why even, I believe it was Look magazine after World War II and some other magazines had written articles on the fact that they didn't believe that Hitler was killed. as was being reported. And so there has been that debate still going on to this day, whether he really died or whether he escaped to some other area. And so, again, Mr. Armstrong heard some of that, and he felt maybe because of some of the things being reported in the news that maybe he would rise up again. Maybe his job wasn't over with. And when he made some of those comments, people mocked and made fun. But again, it was a matter of him thinking about, well, what is the nearest thing that could take place where a power could come back or be revived quickly? But that one, because it was a matter in the church, it's always been a matter that God's given us this sense of urgency, a matter of looking at various things and realizing this could be soon and being prepared for it. Because if you don't think that way, you'll tend to drift. If you don't have a sense of urgency about your calling, and especially now at the end of an age, about where we are and not preparing for it, you will coast. And I've seen hundreds and thousands of people do just that. That's kind of what really led into the apostasy. It was a coasting and becoming spiritually weak. And God warns us against that over and over again. So as he looked at some of these things that were being given to him, it's like, how could this be? What could take place that could cause Europe to come together again after all the devastation? And so people mocked because they saw Europe and how it was bombed. And to make a statement like that, that possibly it was absurd to them. But he was looking. What could take place? And so time went on, and he was given to understand that, yes, there is going to be a seventh revival. Yes, there is going to be another world war. And then he was beginning to see some other things, and it had to do with what took place in Hiroshima or Hiroshima, ever how you want to pronounce it. They've gone back and forth on that one, and Nagasaki, because of the power of the atom bomb. And then other scriptures began to make more sense, that basically if God didn't intervene, man would annihilate himself. Man would destroy himself. Now the means for mankind being able to destroy himself was at the forefront more than ever before, because before it was kind of hard to see that concept. How could mankind destroy himself? But as technology has grown, as the use of weaponry has grown, especially in that particular area, that understanding has become more real to us. We understand. And especially after we saw the rush of Russia and the USSR at that time, and the United States, the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds into the thousands of nuclear weapons, you think, what kind of insanity is this? It was at one time there, after I was in the church early on, that various things had been written about how that mankind could destroy himself 40 times over with all the nuclear weapons. Every living thing, 40 times over. You think, it only takes once. But at least that reality was in the mind. So we live in a period of time that is incredible as far as the human mind is concerned, to understand that there's one more revival. So he sent people to that meeting, the first European Common Market meeting, because he was telling people there have to be three things that come together in Europe: a common currency, and people made fun of that. That didn't happen until long after his death. That didn't happen until a long time after he was dead. That finally they had a common, I think it was in 1999, if I'm not mistaken, the first euro came into existence. And he died in 1986. You think, wow, what an incredible thing. Finally came to pass. They would have a union of nations come together there in Europe. He said there would be 10. It would come down to a matter of being 10 nations. And that was clear back then, during that period of the common market, and that they would have a common military. And I think of all the time that's come along, finally, all those nations are there, 28 nations, and now they're talking about 9 and 10. And I just saw an article the other day where an individual was commentary on some of the facts of things coming out of news out of Europe. They're having elections right now in the European Union, getting ready for that. I don't know if it's happening at the moment here, but they're getting ready for that right now, for elections to take place for the European Union. And the rhetoric right now is that there are certain nations that are going to push forward for a much stronger Europe. They know they're at the brink. They know that they have got to do something to keep it together. That's why I love that example in Daniel. Iron mixed with clay. Very strong, and very weak, not cohesive, not strong at all in that respect as far as real unity. But as far as power, there's a lot of potential power there. And just like the economic power, if they had a better unity in that, they would be a very strong force to reckon with. But they can't pull that together. And so they're fighting for their own existence. And the reality is they will fight for their existence when it's all said and done. They will make decisions based on fighting for their existence, for their survival. But the commentary now is that there are 9-10 nations that are ready to leave the rest behind. The rest can be affiliated with them, but not doing and being a part of the same thing that the initial core, the primary core is, that they're the ones that are going to control various aspects like the military and so forth, and others can participate in an economic form, fashion, and like they are now. But there are some others that are talking about a breakaway and moving forward with plans. So we live in an incredible time because there hasn't even been a military until now, in the past year. Finally, they've made certain decisions and choices where they have their own system set up where they can move armies across Europe quickly. These things are already in plan. And even the U.S. right now, I think I even have an article here. If we get time, I'll read part of it. But the U.S. has been threatening them. I don't know if you can call it threatening. It's a bullying that takes place. That's how other nations see it, and it kind of is that way. To back away from their military, from their weapon development and so forth, because the U.S. sees it as a conflict because of NATO, and they're openly saying that. But think about it being a European, and think about some of the things that have been saying. You have to pay for, you have had a free ride now, which they have, basically in a big way, for a long, long time. Now you have to pay for it. Well, their idea is, who's in charge? You're going to tell us everything we must do? This is about us. This is about Europe. Who is better and more willing to deal with Europe than Europeans? We don't want someone else telling us what to do and how to do it. We don't want someone else bullying us in our politics and in our exports and our imports and who we do business with and who we don't do. They're very upset about not being able to deal with Iran. And they're going ahead and doing it. Certain nations, the most important ones, France and Germany. So this battle is going on. I was amazed this past year, just recently here, not being over there and seeing the news over there compared to what it was even a year before. And there is no love. There is an attitude that has totally changed toward this country. It's incredible to see that shift like it has. It's very powerful. And this is all necessary for what's coming. If that wasn't the thinking, if that wasn't the mind, then certain things wouldn't come to pass as quickly. They're at the door. So he says, so also when you see all these things, know that it's near, even at the doors. So we live in a time, I live in a time, where I've seen all these things that he said that he was given to see about three things with the European common market and then changed to the European Union. All these things come to pass. The euro. Now talking about 10 specific nations in the news. And then a military. They're done. They're there. Incredible. Assuredly, I tell you, this generation shall not pass until all these things be fulfilled. In other words, all these things previously outlined concerning end time events. So there's been discussion ever since I've been in God's church. What does it mean by this generation? How long will that be? So there are all kinds of ideas of what it could consist of. Well, I have a pretty strong feeling I'm in that generation. I just talked about how that since I've been in God's church, that it's been an awesome thing to see these things actually come to pass. To see one of the greatest signs that was ever given to the church come to pass. Because the greatest sign given to the church that the Messiah was now coming, was in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. It was about a great falling away, the word in the Greek apostasy. To Imagine that. We couldn't comprehend that. We had no idea what that meant. A church that was of 97-some thousand baptized members around the world, feast sites that would be upward sometimes 14, 15, 16,000 people at a feast site. You know, if you've never experienced that, that's hard to grasp. I've been in some of that. I think of the Ozarks that was around, was that 14,000 about when we were there that time? But there was one road in and one road out. And there were people out there that were out there for an hour, hour and a half, trying to get out of that parking lot after services. That many people in a big convention. Incredible. So it's hard to imagine if you haven't lived it, haven't been a part of that. And then to be whittled down to what we are, awesome, incredible to understand these things. Something that scattered churches don't even acknowledge yet. We had an apostasy, a falling away from the truth. You'd think that would be so simple to see, to know, and to understand. You'd think it would really be a simple thing, even on a physical plane without God's Spirit. You would think that the ability to look at something and analyze it and say, okay, a third, right at a third, just quit altogether. They no beliefs anymore as a whole. None of the scattered churches, no religious belief as a whole, as far as going back to the Protestant world. Just quit. Just quit in their ideas and beliefs about anything. And then another third that changed to what they had been called out of, as far as that which is along the lines of traditional Christianity. And then another third is just scattered all over the place. Several 600 plus some organizations that sprang up that tried to, in some form or fashion, hold on to things about the holy days, the Sabbath, and various truths that God had given the church through Mr. Armstrong. All a part of what it says in Scripture. And yet people deny that they live through an apostasy. To me, I'll be candid with you, to me that's kind of mind-boggling. Because, again, you would think on a physical plane you'd be able to see that and address it and say, yes, that's what happened. But there are reasons why such acknowledgement isn't made. This generation shall not pass. Say 70 years old coming up here. Somebody just told me it's Thursday. Where did it all go? Well, we shall see. 50 years in God's church. But there are others out here too, but I think that this has a lot more meaning with it than what we might understand. But there is a generation of people at a particular period of time that will have experienced the things that God gave to Mr. Armstrong, things that have to do with the end of an age, the apostasy being the biggest in the sense of a sign given to God's people now, because Paul said, don't think that that coming is coming. If you read through that chapter, it's an incredible chapter, chapter 2. It basically was about when will he return. Don't believe anyone if they say this or say that, because his coming will not be until a certain thing takes place. Then he goes on to say, there must be an apostasy in God's church, basically, is what he's saying. We've seen all that, lived through all that. This generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words will not pass away. Now, we can't comprehend fully what that's talking about, whether it's literal or what, and it very well could be, because we don't understand time. We can't grasp millions, billions of years and what God's purpose and God's plan is in time, through time. We don't know what's ahead. We have no idea. We don't know what it's like to be a spirit being, to be in a spirit body. The older you get, the more you know it's like to be in a physical body. But we have no concept of what it would be like to be in a spirit body. We have no concept fully. We have ideas of it because of the church and because of experiencing God's Spirit living in our lives. But to be at one with God forever, to be in agreement because of that mind that you now have grown to, and God gives you then a body and freed from the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life that war against that very thing, now to be in unity and oneness, awesome. That's all you can say. Bring it on. But of that day and hour, no one knows. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Well, I've had some battles with this one. I think of some of the radio interviews, someone will bring that one on, basically make the comment of what I believed at that moment in time, present truth. Because it goes on and talks about some of these things as we go along here. But again, what some of this is talking about, indeed, you know, there are some literal things here. We came to a point in time where I know we know the day in the sense of a holy day, but we don't know. Reality is we haven't known the actual year. I don't know the year. I don't know if it'll be next year Pentecost, the year after that, 7 years up the road. I have no idea. I have some ideas on a physical plane and with the truth that God has given to us to look at those things because it will fit into some pattern. God is very specific about things that He does. That's why I marvel, and we should all marvel, of what's written in the last book that's outlined very clearly so about time. To think about how we've lived through seven period in time periods, prophetic periods of 1,260 days is absolutely astounding. And the first five, if you look at those and the full numbers, I'm not going to go through all those because there's two patterns there of dual numbers that all come out being the same when it came out to 2012. And that left us 70 days in there. And 70 has always had to do with prophecy concerning Christ coming. And you think of all those days, all those periods of time, five of them, and then to have 70 more days, awesome. But it wasn't then. And now we've lived through two more periods of time like that, coming up to this Pentecost, and it'll been that plus 50 more days. The wave sheaf, the count to Pentecost. Again, dumbfounding. So when is it going to be? Well, my eyes are set on something very specific because we follow patterns. We look at various, it's like there's a marker here, there's a marker there. I know it's not 2019, so my next marker that I'm looking at is 2020. After that, the marker's quite a ways down the road. It could be sooner. There could be other things that God can do to fulfill it. But that's all I can see and understand at this point in time with what God has given to us. So we do follow markers, if you will, in that respect. Because God candidly just has not given it. That's the reality. What we lived through up to 2012, that was very real and something we went through very powerfully so in God's church. But it wasn't then. It's not now either. And that's kind of tough. It's kind of hard when you look at some of those things. And I have some conversations with God every once in a while and have had recently that's, okay, we just move forward. This is the truth. We have been given so much. I wish it weren't so. If there were any other way, I think of Christ telling Him, Father, if there's any way, any other way, please take this cup from me. And I haven't really enjoyed the cup I've had to drink up to this point in time in some of these things. But c'est la vie, such is life. You move forward, and whatever God's purpose is, He'll show us at some point in time, and we'll learn from it. I've learned much from all these things. And so again, it goes on to say here, the angels in heaven don't know. Now, I love this expression because it makes something very clear here that we've come to understand in a bigger way when it says, but my Father only. The reality is that there are things that are given to God's church that the angelic realm, whether it be those who are faithful to God or those who have not been and are demonic demons, they all have one great desire when it comes to things that God reveals in time, because God reveals things at different times in different ways. And the reality is they don't know. That's why it speaks of their desire to hear what God gives to the church. They want to know because there are things that are not communicated. They're not communicated to them. They're not given to them. But by what God gives at any moment in time to the church, then they can learn and they can grow an understanding of what God is revealing at any moment in time. It's just like all the truths that have ever been given to God's church. The angelic realm hasn't known those things. They haven't known the things that have been given at all until it's time. That's why I'm looking forward to some sermons being given, because it's an awesome thing looking at various periods of time. To me, it's an awesome thing looking up to the time of Noah and what he understood, which is very little. Awesome to know what happened by the time of Abraham, 10 plus generations later. Abraham, who was around 50 years old when his grandfather finally died, 300 years after the flood, plus. And to see what they understood at that particular time, and then later on, Moses and what God gave to him, which we'll talk about hopefully on Pentecost. And then all the way up to the time of Christ, another 1,500 years later. Incredible. The times and what God chose to reveal and give at various times. And so it is at this time. There are things that aren't known until God gives them. But as in the days of Noah, so it takes us all the way back, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage. So what's it talking about? Well, obvious. It's just talking about life just goes on as normal. Nothing changes. Nothing changes for people in the world as a whole. In the days of Noah, people didn't make much mind of anything that Noah was saying, except to see this huge thing being built out in the middle of nowhere. It wasn't being built on a river. It wasn't being built by a lake or on the lake. You know, 100 years plus building this thing. I can only try to imagine some of the mockery that went with that. But here it is. He's making an ark. And so people didn't pay any mind. It's just like the world today. They're going to continue doing what they're doing until a moment in time. And only then, as a whole, only then will they be shaken. Just as the time when rain started to come down. And so that's what it's talking about here. They just continued to live life, plan life, marry, have children. That's what it's talking about. Until the day that Noah entered into the ark. And they did not know until the flood came. Incredible. Just kept raining, kept raining, kept raining. Rivers got higher and higher until finally there was water everywhere. And finally, some of the things that he said had to begin to sink in a little bit and a little bit more, depending on how long different ones lived. It wasn't very long. It says, and they did not know until the flood came and took them all away. Then it was over. No thinking about it anymore. God brought a judgment upon mankind. He stated, in essence, that they had so defiled their minds. They had so perverted their thinking. And the same sort of language was used toward Satan when he made the choice that he did to turn against God. When he first made a choice to go against God, he defiled his mind, his thinking. And on a spirit plane, that is something different from a human being. And so that was an instant change as far as that being was concerned. And from then on, his mind was set to go a different way. He did not choose God's way. And so it says here, they did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so it be when the Son of Man comes, or the coming of the Son of Man, when that will be. So again here, we have lived through that. Nobody listens. That's why some of the comments in the book, if you will listen, God will listen. The reality is, people don't listen. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to think about another war. They think that somehow, as people have in different generations, that it's just not going to happen, that it's too horrifying that anyone would do that. Well, tell that to some of the people who think that way. Tell that to some of the people who don't think like in this country that we do. They think differently. There are people who just think differently. They've grown up differently. They have different minds. They have different things that have molded and fashioned their minds. And for people to talk about the power they have, to talk about the kind of destructive power they have, this is being done openly anymore. Putin does it. He does it quite regularly. He makes some startling statements in a very powerful way. And the Chinese and some of their thinking and some of the things that they have developed and are developing, for one great purpose. Just a matter of when will they use it. So again, we look at verses like this, scriptures like this, and we want to know. It's been the age-old thing. When is it? Well, my marker is set 1 year ahead. That's my first marker. After that, we'll have to wait. See if God shows us more, gives us more, if time goes on beyond that. My hope and prayer, candidly, is that it not. For many reasons. And most of it, candidly, for all of you. Because this is not easy, going through these kinds of things and living through these kinds of things. That's why it's so important to understand the truth, to know the truth, to understand how you have it, why you have it, to be able to see the things you see, to understand and grasp how God works in your life, and to hold fast to those things, because that's what everyone has ever done through time. They've held on to what God gave to them. They were convicted of what God gave to them. They fought for what God gave to them. They fought against a world who wanted something different, who believed something different. And they held on to something because of the spirit that God had given them in their minds to be able to see and to know various things. And they latched on to those things. And they live by that. They live by faith. And because of that, God accounted them as righteous, as we've gone through and talked about in those sermons. So I share with you openly, this is not easy as far as these shoes down here. That there are times that I recognize, well, I do recognize the responsibility that's there, and I feel for God's people, for you, but you are God's people. And all I can do is strive to do the best I can with what God has given to me. That's why I think about my commission and my job is to fulfill a calling as a prophet and as an apostle. And I think of some of that process of what I've experienced and what I've gone through, and that's all I can relate and share with you. But I think of the first book when I knew that I was to put on there about myself that I was a prophet, but not in the sense of a prophet. Prophet. There are two expressions in Scripture about a prophet. One is one who can understand, be given inspiration to understand prophetic matters in the sense of grasping things that God has said. Another is to go beyond that and state certain things. And I realize and come to see in a very great way, hey, mine hasn't been as far as the dates are concerned. I am no prophet there whatsoever. Because of what happened during 2008 and 2012, I believe with all my being that I was, I believe that was the job I was fulfilling and still might have been as far as God's work is concerned, because there are certain things we went through and God brought it all to the forefront of why we had to go through and experience some of the things we did, because it was about the church. And so sometimes I have battled with knowing that I'm a prophet. And is this speaking as a prophet or as an apostle? And I've come to understand that first and foremost, I am an apostle. And to understand some of the things that are a matter of prophecy, that's in God's hands. Some of the things that have been written, it's in God's hands as to how He brings things to pass, because there are certain things that I know that have changed prophetically, even concerning Europe and how some things are going to be done because of what God has chosen to do in the sense of not following through and doing what He did to, like in the days of Noah, because it's about judgment. When God came to the point that people had so hurt their own minds, their own thinking, that God said, the best thing for you is to die. Because then in a new age, in a new world, for those who haven't polluted their minds, haven't gone too far, they can still be worked with at some point in time. But if they continue in the course that they're going now, they will not be able to be worked with. It had come to the point in time where some had so damaged their thinking and their minds that no resurrection would ever change them. That's how evil man had become in those days. And that's why at this time we are accelerating in that area of life in the world as far as the way people think, especially in other nations, but even in this nation. There are minds that are going so far that an individual can be so corrupt in their thinking that if God offers His Holy Spirit to them to be able to see and know various truths, they won't want it. God knows those things. He knows what's in the mind. He knows the spirit essence that He's put in the mind. And so that's why it uses that expression, as in the days of Noah, because we are like that. The world is like that once again. And so there is a judgment upon the world at the end of an age. That's why I've remarked so many times when I've heard of people talk about judgment and so forth, They don't understand so often that it's about a specific period of time. And everyone's going to be judged, but there is a judgment where God passes out a punishment, if you will, like he did in the days of Noah. And we're at that time. He's bringing the world to a point in time where he's going to reveal them what we would do if given enough time and the kind of weaponry. That's why I cringe sometimes when I see things on the news about technology and what mankind would do with it. They're talking about robotic life. Some of these things on TV are not so far out sometimes. Things that used to be out there like Dick Tracy and this thing you could talk into, they're not so far out anymore. Back then they were. It's like, yeah, right. You know, a watch you could talk on and you could see on or whatever it might be. And now it's there. And now they're talking about a type of robotic life that can make their own choices and decisions about various kinds of things, not with a human spirit. They don't understand that. They don't grasp that. But the ability within a program to grow, to become something different than what they're programmed for because of the type of programming that's there, that's what's next. Now, I don't know about you, but that's some scary stuff. It really is. Because the reality, if God allowed time to go on, the kind of things that human beings would do, the kind of things that they would do with genetics, with genes, with some of the things that they're playing with now, would make some of the things that some of those did in World War II in Germany look kind of mild, with the kind of sick, perverted, distorted things that human beings are thinking about. If I look at that and think about how horrifying that would be to live through some of those kinds of things, I think it's just time to wipe the slate clean and let people be resurrected in a different age, a new time, which is what God's going to do. That's mercy. So, going on, I understand that sometimes, again, I've spoken as a prophet. Most of the time, it's been as an apostle. Both function differently. So, foremost, I realize I am an apostle, and I make work with things that God reveals as far as truth is concerned, and then build upon those things that God has given to us. So, anyway, this is not an easy thing to go through and discuss in some of these matters about, because I battle with it. Is this a matter of a prophet? Is this a matter of an apostle? So I choose and want and desire to work as an apostle. The prophet part isn't too much fun. Matthew 25. Sometimes we can look at things in life. I think of different ones that I knew during the time of Philadelphia. People who desired to be in the ministry, people who desired to be in certain jobs, to be an evangelist. They have no idea what they want. And when people did do the things that were right and just before God, they were blessed. When it came right down to it, there weren't very many evangelists that actually lived that way, that really chose and desired and fought for being faithful, being loyal as well, not just to God, but to those that they served, as Mr. Armstrong. Because I think of all the betrayals that went on through time and things that different ones did. And so, it's incredible what we live through, brethren. It's incredible some of the kinds of things we see. I want to read Matthew 25. I'll come back to some of this in a moment. Matthew 25, verse 8. This is in the parable where the 10 virgins are being discussed. And I thought about going through a lot of this here and discussing some of this as to what we used to believe in the church. But it hasn't been that long ago that God gave us understanding of what the 10 virgins was all about. There was a time when there were five wise and five foolish. And in God's church, there was a time, because it hadn't been given yet, that there would be two eras at the end of the age, two eras of the church. That the first era was Ephesus, the church of Ephesus, during the time of the apostles, and all the way up through the time of John. Then when John died, another era came into being. And then we came all the way down to Thyatira, which was over 1,000 years long as God's church. and then Sardis for several hundred years. And then by the end of Sardis, it was dying out. The truth had died out. They had three truths left when Mr. Armstrong was called to raise up the church once again and restore truth to the church. It was in the 1930s, the early 1930s. And they only had three truths left in Sardis. The church was about ready to die out. And basically, that's what God said of it. You're dead. You're dying. And what you have is dying. And basically, you're dead spiritually. So God raised up Mr. Armstrong to be an apostle at the end of an age in the Philadelphia era. And it was a time of restoring truth. So that's why we have those 18 truths that God built upon and gave above and beyond the three truths that were still existing during the time of Sardis. And that's why history is so important to remember what God has given to us and what God gave at that particular time. But God didn't give everything. And just like with the 10 virgins, there was this idea that, well, at the end, there would be Philadelphia, the age that Mr. Armstrong was raised up after Sardis to raise up the church, to restore truth in the church. And then would come along in time toward the end, Laodicea. And Laodicea would be a lukewarm body, a lukewarm group of people, but that they would coexist at the same time. Now, we didn't realize, no, they follow each other. They never coexisted. One era has never coexisted with another, but we didn't know that back then. So there was this idea, okay, the 10 virgins, five wise, five foolish. The five wise are Philadelphia. The five foolish are Laodicean. Seemed to make sense at that time because the foolish, they become rich and increase with goods in what they think they know, and they become lukewarm. They don't really fight for this way of life. They're not really living right toward one another. They don't really exercise love toward one another within the body. And so much of that was true about what was going to happen in Laodicea, but it didn't happen until toward the end of Mr. Armstrong's death. That's why I marvel sometimes at what Mr. Armstrong said at various stages. I remember during the late 70s, after the heart problems he had, and he came to a point where he was talking about the church and putting it back on the right track because some of the things some of the evangelists had done while he was ill, while he wasn't doing well, some of the rumblings taking place in the church, they were basically waiting for him to die, and they were starting to take sides. Now, that sounds like someone in the Church of God, doesn't it? It's totally carnal. And God allowed it to happen for people to have battles like that. And so when Mr. Armstrong was, in essence, revived, he came back stronger than ever. And you could see it. When he came up to the podium, as old as he was, those frail hands, bones showing, and he would start beating on that podium because he gave it his all. He truly did. And he cried out. And he was warning a church because he saw what the evangelists and those close to him had done and what they were doing. He knew the battles were going on. The church didn't know about them, but he did. And he got stronger and stronger, and he cried out toward the end. He said, because he was thinking about this thing of Laodicea, because he saw Laodicea. He saw it. He saw it coming into the church. And at one point, he talked, in essence, about 50%. And then, but toward the end, he was very strong. He said, I wonder if 10% of you get it. If 10% of you, in essence, are Philadelphia. That was the context. And so he saw the spirit of Laodicea coming. And you know what? As soon as he died, it came. That was the era that came upon God's church. Incredible. His work was done. The work to that point in time was done. The work of going, the gospel going into all the world. So if you read Matthew 24 and what it says, this gospel of the kingdom will go into all the world. And that's all the farther he went with us, those verses. And then the end shall come, because it goes on to show what happens. I'll just turn over there right quick. It's good to remember our history and what we've gone through. It's not so hard for me to remember because I lived through that portion. If you're newer, you were called at a later time. It's good to know your history and what's happened in God's church from the time of Ephesus on. Okay, where are we? This gospel, verse 14, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. Well, he knew this was his commission. He believed this with all of his being. He told us over and over again, this is my commission, the gospel. So the Plain Truth magazine going out to over 8 million plus. Went by a building here the other day, R.R. Donnelly, and I thought, what is that building? It rings a bell. It was a publishing place, a printing place, one of the plants. I don't know if it's this one here that's in this area, but R.R. Donnelly was the name of the company that in the United States that printed the Plain Truth magazine. And over in Europe, they had another printing house there in Radlett. But millions of Plain Truths going out to the world. And also the Good News magazine, the broadcast and the telecast. It was the largest work of its kind in what you would call Christian type of, if you will, who spoke of various beliefs as far as the Christian world is concerned, that was going out into the world, whether it be radio, Worldwide Church of God was the greatest. TV had far more coverage than anyone else. And when it came to an end, it came to an end. It was done. And so, again, and the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world to witness to all nations, and then the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, then let those who are in Judea flee into the mountains. Well, this is a message to the church. But the first thing that people normally do is look at this physically. Judea, that's Jerusalem area. They have to flee into the mountains because something's going to happen there. No, it's not about them at all. It's about the church. This is all about the church. It's about God's people. And we came to understand that finally. The abomination of desolation. I don't know if you know some of the I hope you do. And I'm going to spend time to talk about this. There was a period of time where Antiochus Epiphanes offered a pig upon the altar. And that was called, in essence, the original abomination of desolation that took place. And so there are those today, even in some of the scattered group, who think that there has to be an altar and a pig has to be slaughtered up on it again. There isn't even, Mr. Armstrong, before he died, made it very clear, there is no altar. There is no Levitical priesthood. There is no temple. There was one evangelist that's made a comment on one of the TV programs that he had that, in essence, that there had to be an altar, at least in Jerusalem. And there had to be a pig, if you will, slaughtered upon it. Well, again, all these things that we understand for us, for the church, the abomination of desolation, is a spiritual thing. It wasn't about a physical thing. It wasn't about a temple being rebuilt. How many times, I don't know if you've ever heard different ones talk about various stones have to be brought into Jerusalem. They have to be cut out without hands, and they're going to be rebuild the temple. They're going to start a rebuilding. It's not going to happen. There's not going to be an altar put up there. It's about God's church, and we've already lived through this portion. An abomination of desolation, where someone is going to offer up something before God, and it's about what Mr. Takach did. So I don't want to go back through all that. We've discussed it in different times. But it makes and marks a very important point in time here when there was that which was set to destroy God's church. It was about an abomination that was set to destroy the church. And so here he came, a man of sin, a son of perdition, who sought to change every truth that God had given to the church and turn it back into the Protestant world. And that's where we had the apostasy take place. And those in Judea flee into the mountains. Well, that's what happened to us on a spiritual plane. And I'm not going to go through all that again to explain all that, but it's all been written, all been spoken of before. Matthew 25, verse 8. So the parable of 10 virgins, it's going through this story here about 5 wise and 5 foolish. But it's going through a story here that we understand and grasp in God's church brings us up to the end of an age of that which was going to take place with God's people all the way to the end. The foolish said to the wise, give us of your oil, for ours are going out. Our lamps are going out. Well, this is about God's Spirit, the oil. It's symbolic of God's Holy Spirit. And so we have understood for a long time, yes, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, if you don't watch, if you're not spiritually alert and spiritually on guard and praying to God and having and desiring to draw closer to Him, then your light, in essence, is going to go out. You're not going to have enough oil to have any light in your life as to what you're living. You're going to start drifting and you're going to go farther and farther into darkness. So that's what this is talking about here. But the wise answered, no, or there will not be enough for us and for you. In other words, every one of us has to fight on our own. In other words, Each one of us is answerable to God. There's nothing we can give to another person. There's no truth you can hand to another person. You can't reason with someone else. You can try to encourage someone and so forth, but it's up to, inevitably, it's going to be up to each individual as to how they respond to what God gives and how we respond spiritually, how much we're going to put into it in that respect, as far as repentance and prayer and really desiring to draw closer to God. But the wise answered, no, or there's not going to be enough for us and you, but instead go to those who sell and buy for yourselves. Well, this is an example here. Where does God's Spirit come from? Where does the oil? It comes from God. And so there is where you have to go. You have to go before God and cry out and say, I need, I want that oil, that Spirit in my life to be strong. I want to become stronger spiritually. I want to be more convicted of what is true. I want to get away from the things that are wrong. I want to live in righteousness. I want to get rid of the crap and the garbage of my human thinking, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. I want to get rid of those things. Now, see, each person, you're the only one who can do that. And if you're not doing that day by day, week by week, crying out to God, just like that, then you're missing the mark. You're not fighting. You've got to fight against this first and foremost. You've got to fight against this before you can fight against the world. You've got to fight against this before you can fight against the spirit world, because you can't really fight against it. It's God that does that because of the strength and the power and the life that's in you. That's why it talks about drawing closer to God. The closer you draw to God, the more Satan is going to flee from you, because he doesn't like God's Spirit. He doesn't want to be around God's Spirit. So each one of us have to fight. And that's what the parable is about. It says, then while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. So the reality is, there comes a point in time. Now, spiritually, this is applied to God's church from the beginning, 31 AD, because everyone must live like this. They must have that desire to be filled with God's Spirit, to live wisely. God has shown us how to live wisely, spiritually. Wisdom comes from God. The truth, the Word of God, it comes from God. God is a source. So we have to cry out to God for those things if we're going to live wise. Otherwise, we're just foolish. If we don't listen to those things, if we don't do those things, we're foolish. And how foolish can one be counted who has had every opportunity to be called by the great God of the universe, to have their minds opened up to truth, to be able to see the truth, when the vast majority of the world, they won't have that for another 1,000 years from this point. They won't have that until a great resurrection. Some are going to have that opportunity to live into the millennium, but most are going to have it in the great white throne. That's when their opportunity. So how blessed are we? And so if we don't use those opportunities given to us, foolish is a good word. How dumb. How foolish would we be to start coasting, to deceive ourselves somehow into thinking we can do various things that God says don't do, and we don't even fight against it. I marvel how far the human mind can go sometimes. And I've used this example many a time because it reveals something that shows how far a human being can go, even with one of the truths that God gave was still there at the end of Sardis, tithing. They still understood that the name of the church is the church of God. It's God's church. The Sabbath, the seventh day, they still understood that was the right day. And tithing, they understood that. They only had those three truths until Mr. Armstrong came along. And I think of how much in the last few years I've cried out about some of those things. Now, I think of an individual who's given so many opportunities to get their life in order, so much mercy that was given to them to get their life in order, time that was spent to them talking to them in love and care, to get their life in order, to reason, that if you don't get a hold of this, and then how anyone could come to a point where they want other things so much more than they want God. You know, God knows what's in the heart. I mean, what would that be? What would you think? What is God to think? I know what God thinks. We should all know. If someone, and one of the most basic things that's given to them of a truth that tests us, that tries us, as to where our heart is, and if someone's heart is not in God, in God's church, in God's way of life, that is one of the big tests, because that's something that affects us on a physical plane very powerfully so. It's just the way the world is. And if we see something else out there we want and we go for it, and we don't hold on to something that God has given us the ability to know and see, how foolish are we? So that's what a great example here. The wise and foolish. So while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Now, in reality, this is very true for those who are part of the 144,000. And I know, very powerfully so, that there were those who had been called to have an opportunity to be a part of 144,000 all the way up to 2000 and, well, somewhere between 2008 and 2012 that God made the decision and said, no, it's not going to happen. You have rejected. You've rejected me. So what does God do? We reject Christ, reject God. We can't just continue on living a lie. God will take care of it. And so that's what God has done. And so I think of some who had been around for decades in some cases. To come to a point in time where you make certain choices and certain attitudes creep in and you begin to work against or speak against various things that God has given, to me that boggles the mind. But see, it happens. It's happened through time because of human nature. And so those who became foolish, who weren't always foolish. Foolishness doesn't always happen right away. Foolishness can creep into your life. Acting foolish can creep into your life. It's happened to tens of thousands of people whom God has called. So the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. So the reality is there comes a point in time where those who will be a part of that will be a part of that. Not all have been called to that, especially now, since that period of time. There are others who have been called to live on into a new age in the church, to be a part of the beginning of the church, the foundation. Incredible. And the door was shut. Afterward, there came also other virgins saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. Incredible. But he answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. We know, we understand that to be a part of, if you will, the 144,000, that it has to be a point where God says, now I know you. And if some haven't lived what they should be living, there comes a point in time when the reality is, God's going to say, I don't know you. If someone comes along all of a sudden, and all of a sudden they see certain things, it's going to happen. There are going to be certain things happen in this world that some people are going to, there are going to be horrifying things happen out here. And then all of a sudden it's going to be like, I want to be a part of this. I was wrong. I was in error. A little too late then. Too late. Incredible. Therefore, watch. So that's what we're commanded to do. Watch, for you do not know. And this is why my thrust has been, because this applies to everyone who has ever been in God's church. This is what, for me, the present truth has been all along, in essence, that everyone who is called is to be alert and on guard. They're to be as a wise virgin, not foolish, but one who desires this way of life, who cries out for, who fights for this way of life, who desires God's Spirit in their life. And that's what the word watch entails. It's a word that means to be on guard spiritually, if you will, to be alert spiritually. And so other scriptures that we've talked about in times past, that's what it's about. Therefore, watch, for you don't know the hour, the day or the hour when the Son of Man comes. Because for each individual who has ever been called into the church, for them, there's a time that a decision is made. Now I know you. If you want to look at the past 2,000 years, the majority, candidly, who have come along in the past 2,000 years, who have been called, many have been called, but few have been chosen. Why? Because of their choices. They were foolish. Somewhere along the line, they gave in to foolishness, if you will. Therefore, watch, for you don't know the day or the hour. So, that's why you're to be on guard all the time, all the way to the end, whatever that end is. And for those who lived up to the point in time, let's say if Mr. Armstrong is an example, he died. Different ones before him, they died. On way back, they all died. And those who were wise, those who were watchful, those who were spiritually alert, who grew with God's Spirit, they didn't know a particular time that they might die. They just, we live and die. But there were others with him. There were others along the journey as well who were called to the church to live this way of life. And very likely a lot of them lived up to a point of death. But long before that, there was a point where they were rejected, where God says, I don't know you. You're not a part. You're out in the courtyard. And they were never able to repent and come into the temple. I hope you understand what I'm saying. For them, that was their day and their hour of Christ coming, because they have been such individuals who make such choices. Those who made certain choices they did back in 2012, that choice was that's what was made. I don't know you. That's when a person is severed from the body of Christ, from the church of God. Mark chapter 13, a little different, some of these that speak here, but I want to read this one first. Mark 13 and verse 20. And except that the Lord had shortened those days. So this is a verse I was referring to earlier about what mankind's going to do that Mr. Armstrong came to understand. There should no flesh, except those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. So this is a part of the story where literally, even on a physical plane, certain things will take place on the world because this is about the end time. And God makes it very clear that in essence, if he didn't intervene, that we would annihilate ourselves, that mankind would destroy himself. It says, but for the elect's sake, and this is a word for select, those who are called, who have been selected by God, even within the 144,000, but even those that God has selected to live into a new age, they have opportunity to live into a new age, even here at the end. No flesh should be saved, but for the elect's sake, whom he has chosen. So all of God's people have been selected by God. That's why he called us. He opened our minds to the truth because he selected us. He first selected us out of the world. We don't understand any of that. And if we look at it and we know ourselves, we think, well, don't even bother thinking about it because there's no point. Why me? It's not because of anything good that we've done. We come to understand that. It's just a matter of God's choosing for whatever purpose he has in working with us and molding and fashioning us. So ours is one of responding, and I'm thankful. I'm grateful. And if we're smart, wise, we're going to fight for it then. But for the elect's sake, whom he has chosen. He makes it clear, God is the one who's chosen. He's the one who's selected us. He has shortened the days. Now, this is talking about right up to the end of the age here then. So for the sake of the church, for God's people first and foremost, and I've made this comment over and over again, it's first about the church. It's first about those whom God has called. Because we're the ones who have the impregnation of his Holy Spirit, that he desires for us to either be a part of that first resurrection or to be a part of the next one after the 1,000 years and to live on into the millennium, in other words, to have opportunity to continue on in the church. God has to do that calling. No one, Christ made it very clear, no one comes to me except God the Father. Draw him, call him. So it says he has shortened those days. Thank God. Thank God that we don't have a long, long period of time we have to go through of great suffering on this earth. It's going to be short. Then if anyone shall say to you, look, here is Christ, or look, he is there, don't believe it. That's the way it has been for a long, long time in the world, even in God's church. Even now, especially if you look at the scattered church, what's happened since the apostasy, because that's what everyone claims as a whole. We claim that, and we believe it with all of our being because of the truth that God has given us. Others hold on to that hope, that belief in their minds. That's just the way people are. People in the Protestant world, they believe that they're right. They believe that what they're doing is right. Others are wrong. A Church of Christ person believes they're right, not a Seventh-day Adventist, not a Baptist, or else they would be there. They would choose to be with them. So people think about different things about what's right and what's wrong. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and show signs and wonders to deceive or seduce, if it were possible, even the elect. Now, this used to be, I think it's stated in the King James in a wrong way. Does it say very elect? Does anyone have a King James? I just have a new King. Even the elect. In the, is that New King James or Old King? That's the Old King James? And it says even the elect? Okay, well, it was stated before in times past, the idea and the thought was the very elect. It's like there's this very elect group. And so, anyway, there's this concept. But the point being is, there's an elect. No one's better than anyone else, except there's just a calling that God has given, and those who are the elect are a part of God's church. Those who are responding to it are a part of that select, whoever they are. And so it says here, in essence here, that even for us, we have to be on guard. We have to be alert. People who have had come out of the apostasy, especially at that time, they had to apply these things more than anyone else at that moment in time, to be careful what you do, what you choose, why, and why. But take heed. See, I have told you all things beforehand. Verse 24, for in those days after the tribulation, so it shows there's going to be a time of great trouble on the earth. It says the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give her light. It's hard to grasp and comprehend. There's another news article, a report that came out recently about what would happen if Pakistan and India got into a nuclear war. I mean, they're talking about these things. And they're talking about a kind of winter, a nuclear winter that would take place and how it would blanket the earth and how that indeed light from the sun, obviously light from the moon, they're cut off because of what's in the atmosphere. And that's why they call it a nuclear winter, because of what happens with the temperatures when there's no light hitting the earth, something we can't comprehend. Thankfully, those things will be short-lived, but there's going to be a period of time for that until God intervenes and stops that and ends it. But it says the stars of heaven will fall. Well, they don't literally fall, but there are things that happen that appear, if you look in the skies, when these things take place, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. What an incredible way to talk about the powers in the heavens shaken when you see what takes place when those things do what they do. Then will they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great glory, with great power and glory. So thankfully it's a short-lived thing, because the reality is mankind couldn't live very long. And they talked about how many million would die instantly from that kind of a war just in that region there. How many millions? How many millions more would die later because of the disease, because of the nuclear winter and so forth. These are all things that scientists, people understand can take place in such a conflict. And if you know the kinds of numbers of weapons they have a lot, both of them. Verse 27, and then he will send his angels and gather together his elect from the four winds, from the farthest part of the earth to the farthest part of heaven. So again, type of language here that takes place at the very end of the age. Mark 13, verse 28. We're now going to, once again, at the parable about the fig tree, so this is where it comes along. But something else is added this time that's not in Matthew, and that's why I wanted to go through and read some of this. Matthew 13, verse 28. Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When its branches become tender and put forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things beginning to take place, know that it's near, even at the doors. Well, even at the feast last year, we talked about how that the stage is already set. It's just a matter of God's time. Everything is staged already. It's just a matter of time. And things are not going to happen until a very specific time, until it's God's time to allow man to do what he's going to do. There will not be an economic collapse until it's God's time. There will not be the beginning of a nuclear war until it's God's time. Certain nations are not going to do what are prophetically stated until it's time. But we're at the door. Assuredly, I tell you that this generation shall not pass until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. So to live through all these things about the end of an age, to come up to within the church, to live through a period called Laodicea, to see the last era of God's church, and that within that era of God's church, toward the end of it, an apostasy took place. And then to see other part fulfilled concerning a countdown, if you will, because of what took place from the apostasy on until it comes to an end. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day and hour, no one knows. No, not the angels which are in heaven. And this is the one that finally really struck me hard. Neither the Son. Now, I understand that in a way that I didn't grasp it before, because the reality is, and the reason stated in this fashion, is because everything that the church receives comes from Joshua. We have nothing except it comes from him. And I believe with all my being that we haven't been given that yet, obviously, that it hasn't been given to him. So, and the reality is, no one knows the day or the hour. We know it's going to be a Pentecost. We know a lot of the events that are going to take place when Christ and 144,000 stand up on the Mount of Olives. We know that day. But what year? What specific hour? Well, even that doesn't say what time it'll be on Pentecost that is going to take place. We just know it's going to be on a Pentecost. So God's given us a lot in that respect. He didn't give it to us until 2008. The church really didn't know it until 2008. That it definitely is going to be on a Pentecost, that he stands upon the Mount of Olives. So, anyway, the reality is, I have not known the day or the hour. You have not known the day or the hour, speaking of the year or the hour. But since 2008, we have known a day that it will be on. We just don't know the day, which means we don't know that specific year. And so God has his reasons why he's allowed us to go through what we've gone through. I don't know what they are. I wish I did. But I've always known too, and we know that there have been spiritual battles that have been fought, and that it's not just about the church. There are wars that take place that we don't grasp, that we don't comprehend, that God allows. I think of the time of Daniel, when even an angel couldn't even come and speak to Daniel until a certain war had been fought. Michael and Gabriel fighting against Satan. No, I don't comprehend that. I can comprehend physical wars that God allowed to take place, that God even worked with Israel in some of those wars, a lot of them, candidly. But we read about some of those things in the Old Testament, about things that God allowed. And when they went in the Promised Land, God told them, destroy everything. And because they didn't, they're having some problems to this day. But anyway, the reality is that there are wars that God allows to be fought. He allows them on a spirit plane, which, again, I don't comprehend, but I know they're taking place. And at the end of an age, when Satan knows that he has but a short time, he is more furious than he's ever been at any time in his life. Because there's one thing about him, there are certain things that he's always tried to thwart and change, but hasn't been able to. He's constantly fought against God. He's fought against anything that God does. He tries to destroy mankind. He just tries to destroy the church, God's people. He's done that through time. But he also knows that he has one more great hurrah, because God's going to allow him, and he knows this, he's going to allow him to have another war. And probably in his perverted mind, there are probably things he thinks he can do to still thwart God's plan. He tried to destroy the Christ. Think, after all this time, can't you grasp that you can't fight against God? But that's his mind. I don't understand that, to have that kind of a distorted mind to continue fighting against the great God of the universe. And so there are things that take place. The only reason that there are things that God doesn't give to us because of things like that and other things that he hasn't revealed to us yet, but that's a big one. Because there are certain things that being isn't to know until God does it. If God gives it to the church, then he knows exactly. So, Satan has been kept off track. I was going to say two. That's true. Take heed. So God tells us what to do. Take heed. Listen to what I'm telling you. Watch and pray. Because when it's all said and done, that's the most important thing. The parable of the 10 virgins, that's the most important thing. To watch and pray, to be on guard, to keep moving forward, to know, to be thankful for the truth that God has given to us, and to hold on to it, because that's your life, that's your power, that is your strength. The truths that God gives to you, they are your strength. That's why I marvel and repeat those things so often about what was given to Mr. Armstrong concerning 10 nations that would arise, concerning a European Union that would come together and have a common currency. Awesome when that came together in 1999, the euro, after he died. He didn't get to see it. To see a European Union in a very powerful way come down to a point in time where they're talking about 10 nations, to see finally a military that they do have now that's their own under their own government. Incredible. Everything set. So it says, take heed, watch and pray, for you do not know when the time is. So we just continue to move forward. And we set markers. So we'll have markers. I'll have markers. And if it isn't 2020, I don't like the marker that's behind that one. Because as I said, I ran a 10-mile run one time with a fella that talked me into it, which I never did it again. But a race is not an easy thing. And looking ahead to certain things, thinking, you can't make it, I can't make it. If you understand that about yourself as a human being, that's a good thing. Because without God, without God's Spirit, you can't make it. You can't do this. We can't do this. We have to do what it says here. Watch. Be alert. Be on guard. And so that's what I'm striving to live by as far as the thrust of what we're doing with advertising, with the book, or with whatever might happen there. Because, how do I put this? Within the year, I'm going to decide whether there's going to be a fourth one. And it will be a combination of all three. It will be the best of all three in one. Now, that's what's in my mind, whether I have time to do that or not, but that's where my focus is right now. If we go beyond 2020, it'll definitely take place. So I have to try to decide what can we do best as a church, what is our thrust, because I think I've shared this with you, I don't know if it was last week or when, but we're not just going to throw money away into advertising if nothing's happening. What's the point? There'll be a point in time where God shows us, in essence, this is where we are. And that's where we unload and do everything all at once. We tried to do that at the end of, well, not the end of, but the beginning of 2012, all the way up to Pentecost. We tried to unload everything that there was into advertising to warn, to reach out in the world. And that's really a large part of our job is still to watch and to be, as it were, like Ezekiel says, a watchman, a watchman, a watchperson, if you will, because we're men and women in God's church. So some of the expressions there I don't really like, but that's how it was written in large part, which has other meaning. It's not always about, obviously, the men. It's about all of us in God's church. And so we are to watch and pray, and that's our job. That's my job as a watchman. That's your job as a watchman, to do what we can do to best use the finances we have, to advertise in the best way we can. That's why there are going to be certain segments we're going to set up, which I'm excited about. As far as the church is concerned, we're going to start having snippets like 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes long, that will be a part of YouTube, and advertise them to the scattered church. So that's the next phase of what we're going to do, because we've already done various testings and so forth with the book in various languages, and I'm going to cut back almost to nothing on those because there's no point. No one's being called. No one's being called. So I hope you understand what I'm saying. Back in 2007 and 2008, we put a lot of effort, a lot of focus and money into advertising because there was fruit being produced. God was calling people into the church. God does the calling. We don't. That's why people can print a magazine. People can have a telecast. They can spend millions on telecasts, on radio. And unless God's calling people into his church, there is really no point. Does that make sense? I hope it does. And basically, I have to strive to make some of those decisions. And I'll be honest with you, I don't like making them, but I have to. I ask for help, for guidance in those things and how to do it. And along the way, God gives help and guidance. Sometimes I don't see some of those things or know what's happened until afterwards. And I look back and think, okay, that was the answer. That's what we've been doing, and that's why we've been doing it. So I don't mean to be just rattling, but I'm trying to share with you as a church where I'm coming from, what I'm striving to do, and knowing that we're at the door, whether it's a year or several years, is immaterial. We continue to move forward. I think of some articles here that I thought I would read just to show you. We are at the door. I'll tell you what, it boggles my mind, and I don't want to give part of this away in some of the posts that's coming out. But I'll tell you what, if you've watched the last couple of years, the news, those of you who especially have some, if you haven't done it on your own, perhaps someone has sent some of those things to you. But to see a change of what's taken place as far as the way people are talking in various countries, not so much the United States, because most stuff here is about politics, politicians, and people's opinions about politics and politicians. I mean, that's the news. Every once in a while, you get something else. But there's no soundness. Markets don't respond in ways that they used to. And constantly, I don't know if you've seen articles like this, but constantly, economists are talking about, this reminds me, this looks like 2007, 2008, all over again. Deja vu, like one said here recently. It's like they're seeing the same things take place, except now it's worse because now it's more inflated. Things that are happening in the world, people aren't hearing news of the world. There are a lot of people who don't understand of what's been taking place around the area of Kashmir between India and Pakistan. They don't realize how close they've been coming to a really horrible conflict. But candidly, there are certain ones that fit into place in their time. People don't realize what's taking place with Turkey. They don't understand the danger of that. And they hear Erdogan. They don't care. Who's Erdogan? What's that? They don't even know the name. And yet that should be a mightily important name if people just understood what God has prophesied to take place with Turkey. That they betray Israel. Speaking of Ephraim and Manasseh and the rest of the tribes of Israel, they've already done it. They've already done it. And the betrayal of what they might do could be a whole lot worse before this is over with, because they're at a focal point of a lot of this. They're right there in the middle of a lot of things. And that man has a particular mindset that is geared in a particular direction, and it's not a pretty sight. He has ideas about an Ottoman Empire. And then farther to the east and a little bit to the north, you have another individual who wants back his empire, the USSR. That's his vision. That's what he wants. He doesn't like just having Russia. He wants the USSR with all the other countries. And while you're taking that, sometimes people take more, or they have visions of taking more. Things that are going on in China, people have no idea. People have no idea about the saber rattling as a whole that's taking place. Every once in a while, you hear about a couple of ships that have gone into the South China Sea and how it's upset China. You haven't heard the half of it, even if you've heard that. But most people in this United States, they don't know about the South China Sea. Well, where's that? There's some clues in there. Anyway, different things that go on, things that are going on with Taiwan right now. People don't know about that. They don't realize that they're running drills right now, preparation for a war with China, because they're afraid, because China is threatening them for what they're doing militarily. Because to them, China, that's still ours. That's us. And if you do this or that, you're going to pay for it. So people don't know the kind of threats that are in this world that exist out there. Incredible. Here's an article. U.S. repeatedly warns EU against developing own arms projects, exposing NATO rift. See, there's an attitude in Europe right now. A lot of it's bent toward a leader, President Trump. But on a broader scale, it's toward the United States, because they feel that they've been bullied for a long, long time. And the reality is, in many ways, they have been. But they see the bullying now in a bigger way. That's how they feel. And they don't like it. And they're not going to take it. And only in the past year to make comments that they're two enemies that they're concerned about, the USSR and the United States. Now, that blows my mind. I candidly didn't think I would hear that, see that day. I thought they would do certain things in secret in a particular time, but to be so open about their feelings and about their attitudes, that's quite a thing you're witnessing out here. In this particular article, it says here, I just wanted to read part of this. President Donald Trump has consistently criticized NATO, urging member states to boost their defense spending and accusing them of taking advantage of the United States. He, however, has been very insulted by European President Emmanuel Macron's idea of creating a pan-European army to protect itself from China, Russia, and even the United States, as I said recently. So again, there are attitudes out there. And these things are important because when people have a certain attitude and a certain thinking, that's why they do the things they do. And they realize, they understand, they live at a different time. They've never seen this country speak in the terms that it speaks. And they don't like it. I'm just going to read several things that have come out. Here's just some headlines in 1 week's time. U.S. sends more warships, Patriot missiles to Middle East amid escalation with Iran. Another one, Trump pulls the trigger, begins process of raising tariffs on all remaining $300 billion China imports. You think that's going, you think all these trade wars, this kind of thinking is what leads into real war? And anybody who doesn't understand that is not very bright. Sadly, there are a lot of people in this world who are not very bright. And yet, history has told about these kinds of warnings and so forth, and yet here it's happening again. Another one, U.S. warns merchant ships of possible Iranian attacks. Clerics threaten U.S. fleet. Another one, Iranian cleric threatens U.S. Navy fleet amid warning regime, could target commercial ships. U.S. policy in Middle East leaves Germany nervous and helpless. The Americans, it says here, are currently escalating the conflict with Tehran, with unpredictable consequences for their allies in Europe. In Berlin political circles, worries are growing about the potential threat of war. How do you think the Europeans are going to react, especially in Germany, if they think this is on the horizon? Do we grasp that this is how people are thinking? This is how their minds are thinking now of what these prospects will mean, because they know what it involves with them. Another one here, and I'm not sure about how I pronounce his name, but is it Guaido? I don't think I'm saying it right. But anyway, the one that supposedly been elected in Venezuela that the U.S. is backing, says begs U.S. military to help with Maduro regime change. So again, all these little hot spots here and there and there, and the world is in turmoil. And when you put the whole picture together, then it really is a scary picture. Another one, Taiwan breaks ground on first submarine factory amid invasion threats from China. Who hears things like that about Taiwan? There's a lot more about those as well, but anyway. Another one, Turkey flexes its largest ever East Mediterranean naval drill amid Cypriot oil and gas grab. They're causing a lot of trouble with the Greeks, with Greece down through that region of the world. There's oil now out in that part of the world, and people want their portion, and Turkey's flexing their muscles. They want in on it. Israel has theirs in a particular region as well. How many people know about that they have found that now in the Mediterranean? Large reserves. If you ask the average person in the street, they don't know diddly squat. They don't know what that means. And how, I don't even want to go into things that Erdogan's been doing toward Greece, but anyway. There's a war on the horizon, and it's just anytime. State Department orders non-emergency U.S. government employees to leave Iraq. Canada dumps most U.S. treasuries in 8 years. China resumes selling. All these little things, they amount to something not so little. Global trade collapsing to depression levels. Another one. Merkel says post-war order over calls on Europe to unite in face of U.S. So this rhetoric that's getting stronger and stronger about, especially now during their elections, things that are being said out there are really strong in Europe. But we don't hear any of that in the United States. Anyway, that was just in 1 week, minor articles here and there. Another one here recently. Iran says uranium enrichment quadrupled, on pace for weapons-grade levels. They don't care. They're just going to do what they want to do. And it says that it appears Iran is following through on its prior warnings issued to Europe leaders that it's ready to surpass enriched uranium production limits previously agreed to under the 2015 nuclear deal. News that Iran has quadrupled its production of low-enriched uranium comes as rhetoric between Tehran and Washington has reached new belligerent heights, with President Trump tweeting Sunday that U.S. attack would be the end of Iran. So how do people respond to such things? It's like pushing someone in a corner. What do? Well, they push back a lot of times. If we could just learn too, don't push at a bear either. Anyway, we're not too bright. I don't know if you've all been watching some of this, but a lot of this rhetoric going on in the Middle East, especially in that particular area, it's not a small thing. Another one here: China testing long-range cruise missile fired from concealed ship container. The repercussions of such things are mind-boggling. How many ships come into the ports of United States cities from China? Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them at times just off the coast. Open up a container. They show a picture of it. Just have like a container like you see sometimes when they're offloaded off of a ship and they put them on wheels, pulled away by a semi. Those are the ones that they say that they've developed out and coming in on a ship. They can bring them in on a ship, have a nuclear missile on them, right off the coast. No way to react to it. What do you do? There's no time. I just want to be part of this. Could the next great Chinese advanced missile threat come disguised as an innocuous-looking shipping transport vessel? A new report details China's new long-range cruise missile, which can be launched directly from a shipping container device, which is meant to conceal detection of the threat right up to the moment of its launch. Alarmingly, it's already being flight-tested, according to analysts cited in the report, which further finds the technology could turn Beijing's large fleet of freighters into potential warships and commercial ports into future missile bases. If cruise, you know, and this is just one of so many things that they're doing, and there are so many things that Russia has right now, and Putin openly talks about some of them. It's mind-boggling. Do you see the one about where he's talked about, spoken of, nuclear missile that can go off in the ocean, create a tsunami? Anybody heard about that? 300 feet high? We can't comprehend such things and such thinking. Would people dare? People hear something like that and say, they would never do something like that. It would destroy millions upon millions of people on the coast. You know, when an all-out war breaks out, and if somebody decides to pick on somebody as big as the U.S. is, it's not something they're going to do without thinking it through, top to bottom. Anyway, if cruise missiles can be hidden in international shipping containers, China could be a major threat to Western targets simply as it moves millions of tons of goods every year. Goes on to say, Russia previously unveiled a similar weapon system in the international arms market. Isn't that amazing? You know what that means? It means other nations can buy it because you're showing it in the international arms market, so it's for sale. Who wants to buy it? It's called the Club K cruise missile system, launched out of ship containers. Crazy world we live in. Another article. The crash in U.S. economic fundamentals is accelerating. This is week after week after week. Warnings out here, and people don't care. It says here, the bottom line is the next crash has already begun. It started at the end of 2018, and it's only becoming more pervasive with each passing month. This is not a doom and gloom that says this is simply facts on the ground. While stock markets are still holding for now, the rest of the system is breaking down right on schedule. The question now is, when will the mainstream media and the Fed finally acknowledge what is happening? I suspect, as in 2008, they will openly admit to the danger only when it's too far, only when it's, I'm sorry, far too late for people to prepare for it. Another one here. Erdogan and Putin pledge closer military ties in Russia. S-400 purchase a done deal. Meeting with President Vladimir Putin in Moscow on Monday. This is an article from Tuesday on the 4th of, I mean, on the 9th of March, just going back a ways, but just showing something that's happened clear back then. Turkish President Recep Erdogan once again affirmed everything is done regarding Turkey's moving forward with its purchase of the Russian S-400 air defense system, despite persistent condemnations and threats from Washington. I mean, they're a part of NATO. How could such a thing even be? It's mind-boggling that they're even allowed to be a part, but they are. Echoing similar statements of the past week in the face of U.S. ultimatums related to blocking orders of Lockheed's F-35 stealth fighter, Erdogan said, those who ask or suggest we backtrack don't know us, and told reporters further after meeting with Putin, if we sign a deal on an issue, that's a done deal. This is our sovereign right. No one can ask us to back down. It appears the long-running controversy will end in U.S. defense planners' worst fears come to, if, you know, let me read this again. Controversy will end in U.S. defense planners' worst fear come true. In place of strained and worsening ties with Washington, Turkey is fast moving into Moscow's orbit. Well, there's more here, but on and on. I want to see if there's more here. I wanted to read on part of this. I think not. That's enough. But the point being is that so often we just don't see what's happening in the world around us. We need to be alert, especially for us. That's a part of watching. That's a part of being alert. There are things we're to watch as far as the world is concerned, because when you see all these things together in one big package, it ought to be more sobering to us. It ought to be something that motivates and moves us to be more on guard spiritually. This is not a time to let down. This is not a time to pull back. And yet, that will still happen in God's church all the way to the end here. Some will choose to let down, to coast, to begin to whatever in their life. It's always been that way. But as a whole, as I mentioned last Sabbath, I've never seen a time in God's church when people have been more united and stronger than they are right now as a whole. But there's still some who try to get close to a fence, straddling the fence, and the reality is we can't. So hopefully, brethren, I just wanted to bring this out, to talk about this again, that the reality is we have to acknowledge, have to come to a point in time where we haven't known the day or the hour. I've had to come to a point in time where I've come to see it more deeply for what it says. And though you think, well, that's pretty plain, isn't it? Well, it hasn't been to me. I'll just be candid with you, and I can only teach what is really plain to me that I believe comes from God. And so this is one thing he's made abundantly clear. We do not know the day or the hour. We haven't been given it, and it hasn't been given to the Son, which, like, duh, or else we would have it, because he gives whatever's given to the Son is given to the church. That's what we need to understand and grasp, because that's why it's given to him. So whatever God reveals and gives to the Son, to his Son, then he teaches, molds, and fashions, and gives those things to us as a part of the church. That's how government works. That's how God works. And so the big message for us is that, no, we don't know that, but we continue to move forward. We hold on to what God's given to us, and we do it with zeal. Because if you let down just because this hasn't happened now, hang on, at some moment it will. And it could be as early as Pentecost. What do I mean by that? I mean that at any time, including Pentecost, shortly after, this world could change drastically. At any moment in time. We don't know. Could be in less than a year that horrifying things begin to happen. We don't know. And so we strive to move forward with all of our being, to watch, to pray, to stay close to God.